Good morning, and maybe you're a little confused right now. Maybe you're thinking, one song? That's it? After all, that's the title slide for the sermon. You're probably wondering, where's communion? What happened to Easter? Well, things are going to be just a little bit different today. You see, this is not going to be the sermon that came with the actual pack, because when we started doing this Easter experience sermon, the sermon that was designed to go here actually kind of had people in the building. And, well, there are no people in the building. Well, with the exception of the voice that you heard, that would be Lynn. We've got Lauren here on the keyboard. We've got Steve here with the drums. And, of course, the person behind the booth today is Caleb, and my name is Barry Creasy. I am the pastor here at Parkview Christian Church. But today's sermon is going to be kind of more like a Disney movie. See, here's the plan. I'm going to preach a little bit, and then you're going to sing. I'm going to tell you a story that will take you to Easter. Yes, there will be communion. I'll let you know when. And, well, I'm just going to ask you just for a moment not to be so obsessed about what goes where or how Easter is going to unfold in front of you. I'm going to ask you to please just sit back and simply experience Easter. So, I have a lot of things I got to do with this sermon today. This is going to be an extremely busy sermon. First of all, I need to correct something that we've been doing for 6 weeks. We've been looking at this sermon series, The Easter Experience, and, well, I have to fix the answers because, you know what? I've given you the wrong answers. You see, I've given you the answers to what would we do with this Jesus, and, well, the answers so far that I've given you over the past few weeks is, well, first, he was dismissed by the Roman soldiers. Then he was rejected by his own people. Then following the rejection of his own people, he was tortured out of ignorance. And then, well, unfortunately, he was also deserted by his disciples. Then he met some bystanders on the road, and, well, those bystanders, as Jesus went toward the cross, they were completely undecided about how to answer this question. And then last week, we met one guy. One guy that got the story correct and he accepted Jesus. But that one guy, he was a criminal. And, well, just so you know, as I had just told you, all of the answers that I've given you, they're wrong. They're all the wrong answer to this question. And you're probably wondering, why on earth would you spend all of these weeks giving me wrong answers? Well, because you can't truly appreciate the right answer until I give you all of the wrong ones in the way that we choose to try to do this question, answer this question. So we're going to make this question correct today, so you've got to hang with me through the story. The second thing that we're going to do is I've got to give you an Easter sermon. I mean, you came here online and you joined us online today because you were expecting something to do with Easter. Somewhere along the way, we've got to make it to the risen Savior. Somewhere along the way, we've got to tell you what it means to have Jesus risen from the grave. And so I intend to do that. We're going to get to the idea of Easter. Of course, I also want to bring in our theme for the year. We are looking at the theme of living faith for 2020, which kind of has an ironic twist to it, because when we laid this all out, we had the idea of all of these things that we were going to do to teach you what it means to be having living faith. And then this little event happened. They call it the coronavirus, and it's not a little event. It's affected the world. And it's meant that the church has had to kind of become a remote church. We've had to move away from our buildings, and instead of just coming here and living faithfully, we're now having to live our faith out in the world. So I want to bring in this theme at some point during this sermon. And the other thing is, you know, what Disney movie would be complete if you didn't have an Easter egg or a commercial somewhere in it for what's going to be coming next? So I also want to lay out and build a bridge to our next sermon series, which starts next week. We're going to take a look at four ladies that had a meeting with Jesus. But first things first, we've got to work on answering those correct questions. We've got to look at picking the right person. Because you know what? Picking the right answer will ultimately begin with picking the right character. So where do we find that particular person? Well, I've got a few big hints for you. First, they must be a main character in the Easter story. So who fits this bill? Well, let's add a couple more clues here. Second, we are talking about a relationship, so it must be somebody that was there for the bulk of Jesus' story. They can't have just showed up at the end. And, well, third, if we're going to actually bridge the gap to a sermon series all about women, then you know what? We better find ourselves a woman that can help us tell this story. And so who is the person that fits that bill? Her name is Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene is the only person that I could find that fit the bill. And well, like the ladies that we're going to start talking about next week, Mary Magdalene had a meeting with Jesus. We find her meeting in Luke chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. After this, Jesus traveled about from one town and village to another, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had been... A woman who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases. Mary, called Magdalene, from whom seven demons had come out. Joanna, the wife of Chuz, and the manager of Herod's household. Susanna, and many others. These women were helping to support them out of their own means. You see, this woman called Mary, she wasn't just somebody that came in at the end. She was there for the entire time. You know what? It's also significant. You talk about Easter. Did you know that Mary was the very first person to individually experience the risen Lord? This is what it says in Mark chapter 16, verse 9. When Jesus rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had driven seven demons. Interesting enough, the question that we've been trying to answer for 6 weeks, the question of what will you do with this Jesus? Mary's life is divided up into six different scenes, a story that makes it complete. And the thing is each scene will correct an answer that I gave you earlier. You know one of the best things about a Disney movie when you're watching at home? By the way, we're watching a lot of Disney movies at home right now. As you hear the songs, and there's one that you've seen a few times, you begin to sing those songs with you. With the movie, and I hope you're taking the opportunity as we sing these songs to not just listen to them, but sing them. We pick up Mary's story, I guess kind of the point at which we meet Mary, in Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 39. This is what it says. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he said. Now, as we begin to look at the story, we see our first answer has been corrected. Because you know what? The idea of being distracted for Mary, it was replaced by focus. Take a look at what she was doing. She was sitting at his feet. And you know what? That's an awesome characteristic. Because not only did she sit there, she began listening to what Jesus was saying. Jesus became a focal point in her life. And here's what I need you to see, though. Just like those Roman soldiers who were throwing those dice at the cross, when they got distracted by what was going on around them, they couldn't see Jesus living and dying for their sins. You know, there were lots of distractions there for Mary also. I mean, culturally, she was where she should not be. She was hanging out with the men. Remember, this is biblical times. This is first century Roman Empire. And so you get the idea that Mary wasn't supposed to be sitting with the men. She was supposed to be in there with her sister cooking. She was not doing what people thought she should be doing. She should have been setting the table. She should have been putting the food out there. She should have been working and serving, not there just sitting. But you know what? She set it all aside. And she made Jesus her focal point. And the funny thing is, as often happens when we begin to move our life toward Christ, when we begin to show our focus toward Christ, it happened. Martha came in and she began to complain about the idea that Mary was just sitting there. Martha probably came in with the flour all over her face and the wringing hands and the messy apron as she had been working so hard. And she looked at Jesus and said, "Aren't you going to tell your sister, my sister, she has to help?" And Jesus told her, "Mary has chosen the better thing. Mary has chosen the more important thing." And I think that's something that we have to remember. If we are going to answer this question correctly, you have to make Jesus the focal point. If you're going to decide, what will you do with this Jesus? As Mary's story continues, we fast forward probably a number of years. It lands us right in John chapter 11, verses 28 through 32. Here we find the word that we talked about earlier, the idea of being rejected. Well, here Mary decides to trust Jesus. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Now, in this story, it was actually Martha who first meets Jesus when he was late to get there for Lazarus. And in true Martha fashion, the conversation had a little more stern tone to it as she began to grill Jesus about why he wasn't there, why he didn't show up, why he didn't do for Lazarus what he had done for so many others. And after their talk, I can almost picture Martha almost in frustration, maybe in a little bit of a huff. Well, she goes and she gets Mary. And Mary begins to come, and you know what? It would have been so easy for Mary to be mad at Jesus. I mean, think about it for a second. This was her brother. We had just read how she had supported Jesus' ministry. I mean, he had raised strangers, he had healed the sick, he had done all of these things, but not for her. It would have been so very easy for Mary to look at Jesus and say, "Why? Why not my brother? Why not my family? Jesus, why were you not there for me?" And you know, that's the thing, is that is what we would expect Mary to do, but when Mary shows up, what we find out is she got there and we saw humility. It says she fell at Jesus' feet. She actually got there and she worshiped Jesus. How do I know it was worship and not just thought emotion? Well, this is what she also did. She acknowledged both his power and her lack of understanding. Her quote was, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." She didn't say, "Why weren't you here?" She didn't say, "Where were you?" She did not ask, "How come you were late? Hey, how come you just didn't speak the word from wherever you were? Jesus, you could have done all of these things." "But I understand. I understand that you are Lord and I am not. I understand that you are God." You see, this is the amazing thing about Mary. When things got hard, Mary moved toward Jesus, not away. And as I look at the way that sometimes I answer this question, the things that I do and the way that I go about it, when things get really complicated, when things get really difficult, oftentimes my way of dealing with it is I pull inward. I want to protect myself. I build up my walls. And I want everybody to understand I just need a moment. But here Mary is, and you know what? She's just lost her brother. And you know what? She's going to answer the question, what would I do with Jesus? And what we need to know is if you're going to answer the correct question correctly, you're going to have to give Jesus a little bit of your trust. It was well documented how much took place in the crucifixion. We did a whole sermon on that idea of how Jesus was tortured. But as we get to the life of Mary, we find that Mary had another word for Jesus. Not tortured. Mary anointed him. We pick up her story in John chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. 6 days before Passover, Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. By the way, I left that out of the story. After Mary gave Jesus her trust, Jesus did the unthinkable. He went to the tomb and had them roll away the stone. It may be in a precursor movement to the to his own resurrection. He raised Lazarus from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served, go figure, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume, and she poured it on Jesus' feet, and she wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. Now, in my humble opinion, and we'll get into this in a few more weeks, I think Mary is reenacting an event that she had witnessed earlier in Jesus' life. But I want to get caught up on that. I guess you can kind of take that as a teaser of something we're going to do in a few weeks. What I do want you to see is, once again, Mary is exactly where she should not be. I mean, Martha's serving dinner again. Surely Mary would have gotten it at this point. Mary should be in there with her. And you know what? Once again, she is doing what some feel she should not be doing. I mean, she's there and she's touching Jesus. She's at his feet. She's opening up. And you know what? As she begins to do that, people begin to complain. As a matter of fact, it was one of Jesus' own disciples that said, you know what? You should have saved this and put it all out there for sale and given the money to the poor. But I want you to see, once again, Jesus tells them, leave her alone. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It is worth a year's wages. As we continue on in the story, verses 7 through 8 tell us, Jesus said, leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. You see, Mary had just received an awesome gift. She had received her brother back to life. You know, the ironic thing is that Martha received the exact same gift, but I want you to see the difference between the two people. Martha was there once again preparing a meal. Mary was there focused on Jesus. And Mary's response, very important response, because the first thing, it was personal. It says that she wiped his feet with her hair. It was extravagant. Mary took about a pint of, and I love the word, pure nard. She didn't water it down to make it go further. She didn't sit there and say, I'll just give him part. She took the entire pint, all of it. And you know what? The Bible says it was expensive. It cost something. This was an extravagant gift that she was giving. And here's the funny thing. She lavished it. It says she poured. She didn't take a cotton swab and dab it out a little bit at a time to make it go further. The idea is she literally took the bottle and she broke it open and she allowed it to be poured over the feet of Jesus. You see, Jesus mentioned that this gift was appropriate because it was put out there pending his death. It was just going to be a short while and Jesus would be headed toward the cross. Jesus would be headed toward the tomb. And then you need to know that that was never Mary's intent. Mary wasn't trying to give an object lesson. She just wanted to publicly show her devotion for Jesus. And you know what? If we are going to answer the question correctly, we're going to also need to demonstrate that devotion. The next thing that we have to fix is the idea of deserted. It was a tough moment. That sermon bothered me. It bothered me that the disciples left Jesus during his greatest hour of need. But not Mary. Instead of deserting, we're told Mary accompanied Jesus. Matthew chapter 27, verses 55 through 56 read, "Many women were there being at the cross, watching from a distance. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs. Among them there were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons was also there." And you know what? The funny thing is, they didn't just arrive here. If you go back over and you read in Luke, it says that they followed him all the way, walking behind that cross, weeping. They were there when Jesus died. And you know what? You would think that when that part of the story ended, and they had placed Jesus in the grave, they would have said, "It is over, it is done, it is finished, it is complete." But not only did these women follow Jesus to the cross, ultimately, they followed him to the grave. When Sabbath was over, here she is again. Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll away the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. And I look at those statements, and what more can I say? I mean, while others were running away, Mary and the other women were again running toward. See, this is an answer that we have to think about. You see, the others, on the day when Jesus was going to rise, they were in hiding. Mary and these women, they were going. She accompanied him to the cross, to the grave, and beyond. And you do get it, right? If you're going to answer this question correctly, if you're going to do what you need to do, then you know what? You're going to have to stay the course. And sometimes that's going to get complicated. Sometimes that's going to drag you down some dark paths, give you some doubts, maybe even cause you to shed some tears. But what did Mary do? She accompanied Jesus all the way. As I mentioned, Jesus met some bystanders on the way. And we looked at these bystanders last week, and we found out that, well, they were undecided. Not Mary. You pick up her story in John chapter 20, verses 15 through 17. At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him and I will get him." Jesus answered her. I love this. "Mary?" I wonder if he shouted it. I wonder if he said it kind of gently in a whisper, so as not to startle her. But when she heard her name, it says she turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have yet to ascend to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." You know, we must be getting near the end of the story because we're kind of almost back where we started. Remember I mentioned to you that Mary was the very first to see the risen Savior? And here is the account where she meets Jesus. The stone has been rolled away. The tomb was empty. And now Mary has gone looking. You see, it seems that in their epic Easter adventure, all of the other ladies that went to that tomb, well, they kind of scattered. And I don't know that I blame them. I believe the events and the sights that I had seen on that day may have asked me to scatter also. But Mary sort of lags behind, as most of us might do sometimes. She's trying to make sense of everything that she's experiencing. She's looking for Jesus. Now, she's looking for the wrong Jesus. She's looking for a body. But when he shows up, she doesn't even recognize him. Again, I don't blame her. Think of all the things that she's going through her head right now. Where's the body? What happened? Who would steal it? All of these things have changed. The stone. What are these angel things? What's going on? It's just not quite what I expected. And even though she doesn't realize him at first, when Jesus speaks her name, she realizes who he is. And I love her reaction. Her very first reaction is reach for Jesus. Her very first thing that she does is reach out to Jesus. Grab hold. Embrace him. Not be undecided. Make your decision quickly. And I began to wonder, is that your response? Some of you online, this may be the very first time that maybe you've ever encountered Jesus this way. And so now that you see him clearly for who he is your reaction to reach out to him? Is that what you're going to do? You see, because now that we are faced with, we come face to face with another one of those Jesus moments, we have to decide. We have to decide, what is it I'm going to do with Jesus? Not is it what you're going to do with Jesus, what am I personally going to do with this Jesus? If I'm going to answer that question correctly, the decision is all mine. We always think that accepting Jesus is the right answer. It is the right answer. As long as that's the very first step in your answer of what are you going to do with this Jesus. We're going to pick up the last scene of Mary's story in John chapter 20, verse 18. Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them, what the things that he had said to her. Luke chapter 24, verses 9 through 11, add a little context. When they, so somewhere along the line, the ladies and Mary must have gotten together. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told the apostles. To pay close attention to this. But they did not believe the women because their words seemed like nonsense. So Luke again lets us know that Mary and the women are back together and they are now going to do the one thing that Jesus asked Mary to do. Share it. Now, the news is totally unbelievable. And the apostles are sitting there saying, this is all nonsense. What you're saying is crazy. People don't just walk out of tombs. But I want, just for a moment, to focus on Mary. Because I need you to see this. Before there was a great commission, before Jesus ever told us to go into all the world baptizing and making disciples, before there was ever in Acts chapter 1, 8, when Jesus said that you're going to receive power to be my witnesses in all of the world. Before any of that, she was the first person to get the personal message, go and tell. See, this idea of accepting is great, but Jesus says, don't hold so tight to me. Go and tell. This idea of Jesus is great, but he says, go and tell. Accepting is wonderful, but telling, here's our theme. That's living faith. If the only answer you ever get to make with Jesus is, I accepted him, you understand that's not what he told Mary to do. He didn't just ask Mary to believe what she had saw. He asked her to go and tell. And here's the thing. If we are going to answer this question correctly, I have to be willing to share it. I have to be willing to go. So what's the correct answer? I fixed all the ones I gave you, but I still haven't given you the answer. But to do that, I just want to submit to you the life of Mary. Her life was ultimately changed by her encounter with Christ. Her experience took her through the darkest hours of her life. Indeed, she saw the worst of people and the best in Jesus. She dealt with being judged by people for her fanatical love of Jesus. She made her decision, and she stuck with it. It took her on a lifelong journey through the cross and to the empty tomb. It wasn't always pretty, and sometimes it was downright messy. Interesting enough, the last time she's mentioned in Scripture were those verses where she was told to go and tell. I got a feeling, even though we never hear her name mentioned again, this is what she did. How do I know? Because it was the first thing that she did. It was the idea that she never wanted anybody to forget. So ultimately, how did Mary answer this question? Two words. Two words. Follow him. Think about it. Mary's decision to follow Jesus changed her entire life perspective. It changed her focal point. She allowed it to change her family. She allowed it to change her belief system. She did so many things to answer that question. What would you do with this Jesus? And now the question is that your answer? See, the story of Mary is a great one, but I'm not really interested in her story at this point. I want to know about your story. If I was to put this question out to you face to face and it says, how would you handle Jesus? What would you do with Jesus? How would you answer it? Is it just a passing thing? Is Easter just that moment when you pause the button of your life and say, you know what? I better do this church thing just to have my bases covered. Or is this thing of Jesus, is it a lifelong commitment? You see, because Jesus never came looking for large crowds. It's interesting, we usually designate Easter as the time we have the crowd. One of the reasons I couldn't do the original sermon that came with this packet was because it required a crowd to do it. You had to have people here. We're always looking for crowds. Jesus never looked for crowds. In fact, every time he got a crowd, he made things hard. Because Jesus wasn't looking for crowds, he was looking for followers. People that would walk with him even when things don't make sense. People that would stick with him their entire life. And so I need to know, is this your answer? When somebody looks at you and says, what will you do with this Jesus? Just follow him, what you're going to do.